Peter Doyle, chief of the audio division of the Media Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission, and Janice Wise, also of the Media Bureau, discuss October's low-power FM application window for state nonprofit groups around the country to apply for FM licenses. We're doing a special here today about low-power FM and wanted to get a quick overview from the FCC about what low-power FM is. And so can you just give people a quick definition?
Sure. Low-power FM stations are, as the name suggests, FM stations that operate with low power, technically 100 watts of power at about 30 meters tall antenna. It provides service 3, 4, 5 miles from the transmitter site, so it's a community broadcasting service. Eligibility is limited to local nonprofit entities, and the reason we're talking is we're very excited that there's a window to file applications coming up. It's scheduled to open on October 15th.
And this is the second window, I guess, about 10 years ago or 13 years ago, there was a window, or I guess it was 2001?
The last time we did it, it was 2001. We had actually a single four-part national filing window. This time we're simply going to have a window for the entire country in a single window. About 3,500 applications were filed in those four regional windows 12, 13 years ago.
And how many stations are on the air now, do you know?
Yes, there are about 850 licensed stations. We granted something over 1,300 construction permits out of that window, and about two-thirds of those sort of finished the process of constructing and getting on the air.
And are those mostly in urban areas or rural areas, or is it a mixed?
It is a mixed bag. There are a few stations in larger areas, but it is primarily a service now that operates in less populated, more rural areas. And that's because Congress, as we were beginning the windows back in 2000, passed legislation that imposed what we call third adjacent channel protection requirements on these stations. That is, protecting stations that are three clicks away on the FM dial. The commission had concluded the potential for interference was negligible, and the public interest benefits of not requiring third adjacent channel were great. That is, it would allow many more stations to be licensed in urban areas. Congress thought otherwise, imposed a third adjacent channel restriction requirement on those filings, and ordered us to do a study which found that the commission was absolutely correct regarding the potential for interference. This time, due to enactment of the Local Community Radio Act in 2010, Congress has essentially reversed course, now requires us not to use third adjacent channel protection requirements, and has also given us authority to waive second adjacent channel, two clicks, distance separation requirements. So this is really the first chance as a result of those lesser protection requirements that many stations could possibly be licensed in many of the largest radio markets.
Yeah, there's is it true there is maybe one frequency available in New York or Chicago or L.A.?
Well, the top 15 markets generally are a very difficult situation. Radio, of course, FM radio, very mature service. We looked at the potential for licensing low-power stations in the 150, in the core areas of the largest 150 markets. We looked at a 30-minute by 30-minute latitude-longitude grid. That's about 20 by 25 miles in the core area, and looked at all 100 channels in all 150 markets. So quite an extensive study. And in fact, in New York and a couple of the other very largest markets, as I said, it's mostly in the top 15, we found that there were no channels available in these core areas. That's not to say that there aren't channels available maybe at other locations in the market, because almost all markets are much larger than the core areas we studied. But New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, these are all probably markets where there will be no opportunity for community radio stations in the central market areas.
But smaller cities such as Albany or Buffalo may have more space on the dial.
Oh, absolutely. For example, in Albany, we identified 15 separate channels, 15 of the 100 FM channels that on which new low-power stations could be licensed. So once you get out of those very largest markets, the situation changes dramatically. I know you mentioned Buffalo. We certainly found channels in Rochester, New York. Yeah, seven channels there and five in Buffalo. So so I think what we hope to see from this is in most of these 150 markets, there are opportunities of five or more channels for low power stations, and so we have the opportunity for the first time to see a significant number of community radio stations start operations in most of these markets.
And to be clear, they may not cover the entire city of Albany, but just the north side or something are part of it.
That's exactly right, and that's why it's so hard to answer the question, how many applications will we get? Because with a service range of 3 to 5 miles, if there's a channel available in the south end of the market and you're a community group in the north end, it's likely that that channel is not going to work for you. So for an application to go forward, we need a interested local nonprofit who has found a channel that works for them, that works in their geographic area. Now, the commission has developed and put on its website a channel finder tool that allows anyone to go in, as long as they know their coordinates, and plug those coordinates in, and we will it will tell you whether there are any channels at that location.
And what are the requirements? You have to be a nonprofit group. I guess you can't. Someone on your board couldn't have been a former pirate radio or convicted of pirate radio. Or I don't. What are the requirements?
Right. Congress, in its wisdom, has prohibited pirate operators, that is, people who operate without licenses, from ever owning a low power station. On the other hand, that same pirate could own, for example, WCBS-TV in New York City. But so that's a statutory requirement that relates only to the low-power service. It is what we call a one-to-a-customer service. Generally speaking, an entity can only hold one low-power license, and therefore there is a prohibition on, say, someone who's a board member on an organization that holds a license from being a board member on a second local entity that either is applying for or holds a low power station. So
does that work with full power too? If you're on a full power board, you can't be on a LPFM board, or
that is correct. I mean, there are procedures for recusal and insulation of those individuals. If, for example, say someone is on the board of a university that has a radio station, if it's a large multifaceted organization, and the board member will pledge to recuse him or herself from discussions about the radio station at the university, then they could be a board member of a low-power FM licensee. Those are sort of technical details. There's some flexibility, but generally speaking, the goal of the service is to put licenses in the hands of new entrants to promote diversity of voices and to serve niche communities that may be underserved currently in the radio ecosystem.
And I know you have a webinar this Wednesday, August 20th.
It is, from 1 to 2:30.
That's going to explain many of the details, I guess?
Yes, it will. We're actually, it's one of two that we're having. First one's on the form. Is it on the walking through the form?
It's walking through everything. And actually, Tom, if you go to the FCC's main page, under events, you can click on the webinar, and it will give you what we're going to go over, as well as by clicking on that site, it'll also, on that next site you get to, it gives you quick links of questions and answers, some of which you're asking Peter about the requirements for licensees. Those types of questions are also on that website, answered on that website.
Right, and if I could just sort of at the 35,000-foot level, it's very important for applicants to familiarize themselves with the filing form and the instructions. The webinar is going to help with that. And it's also the case that all applications must be filed electronically. So applicants have to get up to speed on the form requirements and on our electronic filing process. And we're hopeful that the webinar and providing continuing access to interested applicants will ensure that those are not real impediments for motivated applicants.
And not get bogged down in the specifics, but the application process is much simpler than, say, our station went through a full power application process several years ago, and we had to hire an engineer and a lawyer. This is a much simpler form.
It is much simpler, but we have put extraordinary effort and attention in the form and instructions to let applicants do as much as possible. However, now that we are accepting second adjacent channel waivers, and they may be necessary in some areas to get a channel at a location that a group can use. Unfortunately, it's going to be difficult to complete that waiver without getting the help of a consulting engineer. But we started as simple as we could, and the complexity that we're adding is really to help applicants. We really couldn't figure out a way to both make it a process that applicants could complete by themselves and yet provide the maximum opportunities for licensing new stations. So we just had to balance those competing interests.
So there's two forms to fill out if you're in a tight market. You have to fill out a second channel waiver if you're on a second adjacent channel.
It's really just one form, and it would be one exhibit on that
okay.
form. But I must commend organizations such as Common Frequency and Prometheus Radio Project. They too have developed and continue to develop tools to make the technical side of the filing process as achievable as possible for a group of applicants who definitionally are not really that experienced in the licensing process.
I know it's a little apples to oranges, but can you judge the level of enthusiasm or the amount of questions that you're fielding compared to the last low-power FM go-around?
I really can't. It's very impressionistic, and by its nature, this is a very dispersed service, and we know everything there is to know about licensing opportunities in the largest 150 markets, and we know almost nothing about the demand side of the equation. So that's sort of one of the fun aspects of the window. You electronically open the filing gate on October 15th, and you see what comes in. As I said, we did get about 3,500 applications last time. Some folks are expecting many times that. I don't know about that. I think it's a pretty daunting task for an organization to take on the responsibility of funding the application process, the construction and operation of the station, and filing number in the order of the last window would certainly likely, given that there are so many more markets and niche communities that probably are in play that were not in play last time. But after that, I just sit back and watch. I've been notoriously bad with filing windows as to the number of applications we might get, so I've actually taken myself out of that game.
What was my question? The stations that are filing, is there one question that they're asking that we haven't covered that they're asking over and over again?
No, I think there is interest in the comparative factors we use when conflicting applications are filed. Rightly, applicants are focused on those. We favor local organizations that have been in business for at least 2 years. We favor applicants that pledge to originate local programming and also to maintain a main studio that will be accessible to the public for a certain number of hours each week. And the form and the instructions explain those comparative factors in great detail.